Welcome to Big Talk for Breeders. My name is Michael Doherty, a show jumping breeder from the west of Ireland. And in each episode, I'll bring you a new interview with a successful sport horse breeder. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Now let's get started. This is episode number 42 with Australian breeder Alice Cameron of Oaks Sport Horses. With a lot of the interviews to date, they've focused around breeding programs in Europe. And I think it's always interesting to get a different perspective and a different insight into a successful breeding program operating in another country around the world. And in this interview, we discuss her motivations behind starting a breeding program 20 years ago. We look at the mentors and the foundation mares that got this breeding program off to such a successful start. Alice discusses the importance of the mare and some of the key focuses on soundness, temperament, blood, that have served this breeding program so well throughout the years. We look at some of the changes happening in their own breeding program and how the international show jumping experience of her daughter, Hilary Scott, is shaping today's breeding program, and reflect on the experience as both a mother and a breeder watching your daughter and homebred compete together at an Olympic Games. Alice also takes us back to look at what Oaks Milky Way, Hilary's Paris Olympic mount, was like in her younger years and what attributes they feel have made her so special. 20 years ago, you started the Oaks Sport Horse Breeding Program. Mm-hmm. What I was curious to learn is, at that point in time, can you talk me through what your main motivations were? What encouraged you to start a breeding program at that stage?
I'm probably the product of what you were talking about. My life was in agriculture, and I did a lot of networking with different people in the plant breeding industry and cattle and that sort of thing. So agriculture has always been, you know, the core of what I do. So the equine for me was a little bit like you were saying for your project. It was just, I've always had horses. I've ridden, I've studied them, I love them. I've never been a competitive rider. But when my children, but particularly my two girls, started riding, I was determined that if they were going to ride, they would learn to ride properly, because we lived way out in Western New South Wales, and you hopped on your horses to go out to bring the cattle in, or you went to pony club once a year. The only show jumping we ever saw was the annual show, and the show jumpers were really the entertainment. It was so totally different than the European experience. But I also really like the classical approach to riding, to dressage, and I took a lot of lessons as an adult. And to me, the mechanics and the horses as an animal and as a breeding is just a fascinating thing for me. You know, different stages of my life, I broke cattle and dogs and things like that. I think animals, domestic animals, are there to be made better and to build, have building blocks where some take advantage of their inbuilt traits, but also ones that you can develop in them. And not on, always are they the same. Sometimes you bring a hybrid from the outside. And, my girls were just starting to ride. And at that stage, 20 years ago in Australia, mostly the jumpers were off the track, thoroughbreds. There were a few warm bloods. I'm sure in the upper echelons, which is definitely not where we were, there were, I'm sure, others. But at our level, there were a couple, and it was like, you know, watching a quarter horse after doing some cutting compared to a thoroughbred doing it. All of a sudden, there were these horses that were made for the job. And it just, for me, it just stood out so much, both the way they were ridden and their aptitude for what they were doing. And so that really intrigued me. I had moved to the area where we are now. I had just sold some property. And I thought, you know, I can't bear not having any land. I better buy some land. And so I had a base. And I thought, well, I better the girls are riding, we might as well, if we're going to have a horse, they might as well have their ponies. But that'd be an interesting thing to do as well. I didn't ever think of it as buying horses for my girls, but I was interested in what they were doing. And as they went up the grades, maybe that might be interesting, but it also might be a good thing to do to watch how it went. Doesn't sound very fixed idea, does it?
It was just a kind of an interesting pursuit or a curiosity, was it?
Partly. I really do like breeding. I think I like improving something. I love genetics to see how things improve and where they go. I've just always found it fascinating. And of course, the issue was always, is it a hobby or is it a business? And that, I'm sure, for small breeders and people like me who are just getting started, I'm sure that's always a dilemma, because, you know, after your first one or two, you realize it does actually cost you a lot. So then you have to go down a track to actually make it at least something that is deductible, and then you make it into a business. And then all of a sudden you're on a roll and you're going to make it a better business as you go. And so, and that's where then things like, you know, developing a brand, the name and things like that. Those were important decisions for me when we started, was getting those things right. It was an interesting time and an exercise, but I loved doing every bit of it, both with my girls, but also because I really enjoyed working with the young horses, the young animals, and watching them improve as well.
For you, my understanding in establishing the breeding program and getting those foundation mares at the beginning, that those first three or four mares all came from Europe.
Yes.
What I'd like to hear is, from your perspective and your experience, again, it's 20 years ago. I think things are probably a lot easier now, but 20 years ago, what did that process look like in terms of finding them and selecting them? Like, was there specific criteria at the time? Or, yeah, what did that look like? How did you find them and choose them? And what did the process of actually bringing them from Europe back to Australia look like? Because it's a big move and it's a big investment.
I knew so little, I have to say. I had some incredible guidance from, I was interested in it as a concept. I thought, this is what I would like to do this, but I didn't know anything about going to Europe and selecting a horse, who I would see, where I would go. Chris and especially Helen Chug talked to me a lot, and also Mike Barrera, who at that stage owned they together were Australian horse breeders. And Mike is a thoroughbred breeder. I talked with, I remember one day meeting at the indoor at SIAC, which is, you know, the international riding place in Sydney, and I hadn't even met Mike before. We had a bit of a chat, and I said, this is what I'd like to do. And, you know, we discussed it, and well, yes, we could do this and we could talk about it. Anyway, they actually went overseas and chose my first mares for me.
Okay.
And I guess it was a big leap of faith on my part.
Yeah.
But they were also, there was a lot of trust between us as well, in that they had just recently brought Vivant. They owned Vivant together, and then also Conquistador came in. They had a few mares. So there was the basis of, you know, of a program that could go forward without owning everything. Everyone had a stake in it, but no one was too exposed. And they chose my first mares. And looking back now, they couldn't have done better. There was a Darko Voltaire mare. The best mare I ever had was a 9-year-old. She was a Jalisco B Grand Veneur mare, and that was the mother of Milky Way, Constellation. You know, it was just fantastic. Cosmo. She had, you know, quite a few really excellent foals, even though she was an older mare when she came. A Cassini 1 mare, and a beautiful French mare. And those mares, they produced the first of our world championship horses. They're still going through, and their daughters now are the core of what I'm breeding with. So that was a terrific start for me, and a great way to learn. It was always my thought that the mares are the most important, and by getting mares, young mares especially, with the exception of the older mare, we could use them. We could also put them into the sport. We were probably some of the earliest people using embryo transfers. They weren't not many people did that 20 years ago, and it's probably a little bit to do with the agricultural, research and that sort of thing. And so the mares did two jobs. They went into the sport, but they also produced lovely foals.
Was that something that you had already been doing in cattle breeding? Like, had you done any embryo transfer? And even again, 20 years ago, starting into breeding as a completely new venture in horses, but with that understanding about the importance of the mare, was that from the cattle breeding side of things, or where do you think that came from?
I think just understanding animals. I mean, if I could have been a zoologist, that's what I would have done. I love animals and I'm fascinated with them. But so much comes from the female side as far as the nurturing, the temperaments. I'm really quite a great believer in the old, blood over bone. I think, your good solid mares, that to me is some... I just feel with mares, cattle, even dogs, if you like, but there are some that are better made to breed as opposed to some that are made for the sport. And I was very fortunate in several of mine have been able to do both. The other thing was a practical thing in that I had a farm. I mean, I had very little staff. I didn't want a stallion. It was just beyond what I wanted to be coping with. My girls were younger at the time and with the horses. Stallions just weren't, that was another element that I just didn't want to introduce into our farm life.
Yeah. Particularly in those earlier years, I'd be curious when you had those mentors like Chris and Helen Chugg, or with Mike Barrera. Was there any specific advice that they gave you, not just in purchasing those mares, but in the years to follow, that really stood to you in your time in breeding or how you approached the sport horse world?
Soundness. Absolutely good foundations and soundness. And that's something that I can remember, Helen in particular, well, Helen and Chuck, Chris, both and that's certainly been something that's stuck with us. Our horses have been good foundations, good straight legs. I think we haven't bred all that many horses really over the time. I was counting up when you asked me about this interview, and I thought, oh my goodness, we've only bred about 180 horses. That's not very many, but I could count on one hand the number of crooked legs that we've had. They've been good legged, mostly good footed, and in Australia there are certain we're a country that's wet and dry, so it's always feet can be a problem because they change shape and size so much as they're young, but good foundations, I think, and for me, good temperament as well, so that you can work with your horse, and plenty of blood. Especially for Australian riders. Australian riders, at that stage, most of the warm bloods in Australia, we would think about a warm blood and they'd think of a big, heavy horse that took a lot of leg, a big, strong German leg on the horse to generate the power. And Australians are used to thoroughbreds. They want them nice, light, let's go. So plenty of blood and soundness.
And I wonder, did the soundness or the kind of the functional confirmation emphasis, is that Is that strongly influenced from Mike's Thoroughbred background?
Quite possibly. There were, I can remember, sure there was one particular thoroughbred that he was always keen to put over his warm bloods, but quite possibly. Probably the reason I started breeding with Clearway was as a result of Mike's suggestion. Being one of the lighter, probably the most, the lightest of the Capital Ones. And to this day, I mean, my daughter Hillary, if it's got Clearway, she that's her preference over nearly anything. And that's something that we continue with in our breeding program, that type of bloodline.
You mentioned about in advance of this interview thinking about how few horses that you bred. You said about 180 across 20 years.
That's right.
And it makes what you have achieved even more impressive because at the moment, in the FEI database, in terms of all the horses that are registered for international competition, there are currently 50 plus Oaks sport horses in the database. So that's not even like, in terms of the thoroughbred world where it's like breeders to runners or runners to winners. Like, in order for a horse to be registered there, it's either about to compete internationally or good enough for someone to go and register an FEI passport. So there's already an incredibly high number of horses have gotten to that level. That in itself is one thing. But on top of that, you had two horses at the World Championships or World Equestrian Games in Tryon. You have bred not only the horse but the rider in terms of Hillary and Oaks Milky Way that did the World Championships in Herning, on top of the Paris Olympic Games. Even in the last few weeks, your horses have won, I think, two recent World Cup qualifiers in the last 4 to 6 weeks, on top of doing a 1-2 in the Australian Senior Championships. And that's without all other like wins, placings, Nations Cups. That's just like if you were to do kind of a quick highlight summary. For me, that's incredible, even if someone was breeding much bigger numbers. Like your horses have been competing in, obviously successful in Australia, but in Europe, in the USA. It's an incredible list of achievements. Can you give us an overview on what your current program looks like? Because we all need luck in the breeding world. You can get lucky and breed one good horse. I don't believe that luck will get you to achieve the list of things that I've just mentioned. So I'd like to see, like 20 years on, what your current breeding program looks like in terms of the number of mares that you're currently breeding from, or the average number of foals that you're having, say, in more recent years.
It's funny, Hillary's just been over, and we're actually probably going to become a little bit more targeted in and breeding fewer and more specifically, especially because she's overseas and I'm getting well past when I need to be down at the farm, and maybe I should be playing golf instead of. And so we are actually we've. We're fining down maybe more for the top sport. The main lines are coming from the Milky Way line. We've got I have one mare that unfortunately was injured when she was being broken in by Emerald, and she's producing some really lovely foals. We've got a Tangelo mare, and we did buy a imported a young stallion. A Kotoki stallion, and he's throwing some very nice horses, and as well as using outside semen, we're so fortunate in Australia because we can get semen's become so readily available worldwide, as you know. But in the past, I guess maybe the biggest year we ever produced maybe 17 or 18, and it was too many for us to manage well. I think the success of the horses has been because I've never really put them out just openly on the market for sale. It's a bit of matchmaking. They've been available to purchase as opposed to being for sale, which means they just haven't gone just everywhere. It's a bit of semantics, but to the right people, a horse can be sold, whereas there are some places I would never sell a horse. So they've had the best chances of any horses as well. I have a stud manager that's been with me for those whole 20 years. She's foaled down every single one of those horses, and if she called it, it would still come and prick its ears up to her. So they've been quite individualized as they've been growing up, and that I think is, they haven't been cosseted and stabled. They've been out in the paddocks, but they've been humanized. I think people that take an Oaks horse know and expect that it will have, we would be disappointed if it didn't have a good character. And every horse isn't going to be a Grand Prix horse, but if it can be the best meter 20 horse it can be for its rider, and that person loves that horse, I've done a good job.
Yeah.
And that is an important thing for me. And that's been the bedrock of what we've built our maybe Australian reputation on. It's fantastic for me to go out to the shows. And there are 14-year-old horses that we've bred that are going on the juniors there, and they're at all levels. They're at Pony Club. They're at World Cup shows. They're sort of infiltrated at all different levels. But now it's the ones that are the two that just won the World Cup qualifiers the other day. They're the 13-year-olds. It's the 14-year-olds. It's the 15-year-olds. And I think in Australia we forget how long horses' careers can be if they're sound, if they're not raced through. And I've waffled off the subject, haven't I? I'm sorry.
No. It's all relevant. What you've
because
actually
that's where we're going. We're actually to produce them. We're cutting down and being a little bit more targeted, and probably we won't be producing the meter 20 horse just by chance as much. But they are getting sharper as well, so they're not increasingly. Maybe they're not quite the horse that you know an amateur rider might want either. I mean, they're not. It's not that they're nasty or sharp. They're just sharper.
Yes, In what you've just said, you've actually answered some of the questions that I was thinking of in advance of this conversation. Was an observation had been the success of some of the Oaks horses, not just that they had some successful young horse career, but I had noticed that several of them had been competitive well into their teens, which is what you're touching on. And one of the things that I had wanted to discuss was why do you think that there was that longevity there? But you've actually, in how you've described your foundations and the priorities and what was important, or even in terms of how the horses are raised, like, do your horses, particularly as young horses, is everything able to stay out all year round?
Yes, they're out all year round. They will come in for certain times when, they might come in for a week of handling, or they'll come up to have their feet done, teeth done, and those sort of things. But yes, they do live outside. They aren't stable. We have a really temperate climate here. As I said, it can be wet or it can be dry. But yes, basically they're outside. And I think that's also very good for them.
In terms of the team, you mentioned your stud manager. We didn't get her name. If you'd like to give her a mention.
Natalie Gerard, but Nat's been with me for 20 years, the whole 20 years.
And what does your team look like? Is there a broader team? Because particularly it doesn't seem to me that you, like you're saying, you're not actively marketing or selling your horses, which tells me also that there are going to be quite a lot of young horses to manage at any one time. What does your current team look like? And then could you talk me through a little bit of what it looks like to be a young horse and to be started and produced as part of the Oaks program? Because something's working well.
Well, We let them take their time. They tell us, mostly we'll aim to have to break them in at 3, 2.5 to 3 years old. Some of them, if we have maybe a colt that we might run on a little bit, we might give him a break him in a little bit earlier. If we've got one that's, a little bit alpha and bargy, they might get a extra work. And that's the good thing, that we're able to do that individually rather than do them as a job lot where they all it's time, bring them all in. So we can pick and choose a little bit, which is nice. So they'll be broken in at that age. And then as they come up into the 4, they'll have a little bit of work. And again, depending on what they need. I think some of the best horses that we've had, they might be 5 or 6 by the time they get a bit of work, because they've needed to grow. They just haven't been, especially the taller and bigger horses, in my opinion, they don't necessarily, fit the young horse agenda for jumping certain heights at certain ages. Their brains just aren't talking to their limbs, and I think you can just break their hearts by asking too much of them before they're able to do it. It's like, I've got a German Shepherd here that he was mature at 6, and I've got, a Foxy that, at 12 months could run rings around him, because their physiology is so different, and their mentality because of their physiology. But the big fellows will do the job if they've been trained and given time often.
With your young horses, with anything that you've made a decision to keep for the sport, for example, is everything backed and started in the earlier years as part of your program in Australia? Or do you
It,
ever
we're
outsource to other riders at home?
uh, we, we've changed the plan, and the model has gone through so many incarnations. I can't tell you in the early days, especially because, Hillary wasn't riding. I mean, now I've got a pipeline of where horses go. Where in those early days, we sold a lot of youngsters, foals, yearlings, 2-year-olds. Constellation that Jamie Kermon took to try on was sold as an unbroken 2-year-old. We had a couple of li little mini open days. Free jumping isn't much of a thing in Australia, or certainly in those days. And we'd have a little day where people would come and watch them jump. But it was good because we were all being educated together. It was something that I'd seen and watched, the Europeans doing, and that to me seemed the way, to learn and to see what our horses were like. Not so much how high they can jump, but what's their attitude to their jumping. And so quite a lot of horses in the early days were sold as youngsters, and whereas now our plan is usually to break them in and then make our decisions. And that's where, because as we all know, once you put someone on them, that's when the costs start to add up. So we're much more particular then about what its pathway might be. And because Hill's based in Europe, and so that she then has she ha she has a pathway that she can take them and produce them. When we first started, I think it might have been maybe 2009 or 10. I'm not actually even sure. It might have even been earlier. There was really no incentive for people to take a young warm blood out without, basically, if they wanted to be competitive, there was no place to go. There were no young horse classes. And so Jane Frankham and myself, and then a few others, we started some young horse classes. And it was a place where people with their young jumping horses could put them in their own environment. And we had just an optimum time because, I mean, as you can imagine, young thoroughbreds are so much quicker. So in the 80, 90 meter classes, meter 10s, the warm bloods just were a different animal by comparison. And so to put them with their peers was a really good way to reward their owners and riders in their own group. So that was a good way to get them started. And of course, then young horse classes then over 10 years take a life of their own, and there are pluses and there are minuses, as I'm sure everyone understands about that as well. But it certainly was a good way for people to get their young horses out. We do outsource, yes, because at the moment I don't have a rider here at home. I've been through different stages where we have. We've had a rider that, you know, riders that have been employed and then had their own clients and take them to shows. And we've had wonderful group of riders that have been through and helped us with our horses. We've had riders that have been based at our place and run their own business and run their own horses, do some of our outsourcing. And then we've also more recently, we've had quite a number of our young horses have gone up to Equus, to Jess and Rod Brown, where they've taken on some of them. But then we have some that have gone to a few other riders, which has been, it's been a good way of getting them to a certain stage. Every horse isn't for every rider. And then it's a chance to see where they're up to. What I find is one of the biggest problems developing young horses here to a stage where they can be marketed overseas is our surfaces. We have some very good shows and surfaces, but we don't have too many all-weather surfaces. And so young horses in particular, the ground can be so variable, it can be slippery, because we don't have a lot of just young horse shows. So most people in Australia are out competing their group of horses. So the prime horses, as is understandable and as it should be, are the meter 40, meter 50, the top end horses. So the young horses are a bit of an afterthought. And from the organization of the shows, they also then are the second rings. So you've got your young horses in with your younger and inexperienced riders as well. And so that's the time to me that they can get surprises that they don't need. They can get frights for them to be a steady, you know, solid citizen going forward. I think we don't have the range of training shows that are available in Europe. That's the crucial difference, I think, is that, you know, in where Hill lives in Valkenswaard, in an hour's radius, there are probably 7 or 8 different training shows every day of the week that have jumps and Liverpools and flags and music and bells that our horses would only see at a big show.
Yeah, and it's always going to be a struggle as a nation, I guess, to really gain any great traction until that's sorted.
We've got some terrific riders in Australia, and I think there are a lot of people that are really trying hard to start to address this. We've got some, we were just at Stonewall, for example, last weekend. Beautiful grounds that Chrissy Harris has been working on for years. But, you know, it takes a long time to establish a good grass surface. We need more venues that have consistency of surface. Yeah. And the other problem at Breeds too is that you've got a training program. You want the exposure for your horse to, you know, to go through certain stages, to try different things. You leave it lead up, and then last year we had so many things that were cancelled because of weather. And so you waste a preparation. And it doesn't mean the horses, it's not wasted, but it's not as consistent an approach. And it's no fault of the riders. You know, we've got really, you know, very solid riders and good horsemen. But I think the facilities, I think, hold us back a little bit.
You mentioned Hilary being based in Europe and in Valkenswaard in the Netherlands specifically. My understanding is she's been based there for approximately 9 years.
Oh, I think nearly 13 now.
Okay.
Yes. Long time.
What does the selection process look like for you at home and between the two of you? When you're assessing and deciding what horses are going to be kept and produced in the sport more long-term, and to make the decision and the investment to send them to Europe, what does that selection process look like? And is there a specific age that Hilary likes to take them to Europe? Or is it more just when she sees something that really convinces her with the young horses at home, they're They're coming to the Netherlands.
Well, one of the assumptions there is that the horses are being bred only for Hillary, which probably it's only been it probably wasn't the case until maybe in the last few years. I think since she has been there, there's no doubt she has learned so much and has developed, I think, a good eye, knows the type of horse that she likes to ride, and also, we've all made, mistakes about horses that we've maybe didn't sell when we should have, or you keep too long. That's the story of breeding and selling, isn't it? That's a different story to the actual breeding, and the producing is something that probably Hill knows a lot more about than I do, because she's the one who takes them on to that next stage. And so what we try to do now is that she would come home each year, so at least once, to see the young ones, to see the foals, and to so well, this is one I might earmark. I'd like to take them. Increasingly, I'm going to, step out of that side of it, and she will take that forward. So the decisions then will be hers to what's taken, when it's sold, when it's what, at what stage is it marketed. And you can never have too many to sell, except there's too many mouths to feed. We run very leanly here in Australia, as far as keeping our horses going. I think they get a good start, but from my point of view, traveling too far with them to get to all of the shows is nearly uneconomical.
And I guess before you make the decision that you're going to send something as far away as the Netherlands, I suppose it's good in a way because it probably forces you to be very analytical or critical. Say, for instance, if your daughter or your rider is an hour down the road, will you have the same critical eye as if you have to go to the effort and expense of sending them to Europe? So now I know we can never be sure, like you don't know what you have until they've actually done the class, but
No.
it probably does force you, and it's probably in line with what you were saying about the changes versus the past and the numbers and how you were breeding. That was one of the things I was curious to know from your perspective is how you feel now that Hillary is so active in international sport. As everything has matured with the breeding program, I was curious to know how this her experience and both of your probably increased exposure to the sport, how that's affected your breeding program. How do you feel that's changed your program the most?
Well, I think that's what's probably making us a more targeted in what we're producing, and why we will probably narrow down the lines and the type of horses that we'll produce. I think, there's no doubt over the years there's been more sentiment involved than probably should have been used. We've particular, horses we like, so we take a little bit longer. I think, the pencil's sharpening, and we're starting to, it's more a business, definitely. And certainly from Hillary's end, I mean, if she because she's taking this on, the last thing I want to do is here's a poison chalice.
Yeah, burden her, yeah.
We wouldn't be the first people that horses have taken down the long slippery slope. But it does make us much, much more stringent with vetting would be very important. Having enough blood, knowing that the physiology is right, temperament, trainability, those sorts of things are still very, very important. She has a rider at home now who is able to keep the young ones going. If she takes her 3, 4, 5-star team away, she has someone at home that can keep the others ticking along and develop them accordingly. And that will be it's more a process. It's taken us a while to get to this stage that we would do that. But I think we're better able to select the horses that will be more competitive, and it's a different market also. I mean, for Australians, I suppose for us the big advantage is, even though we're a long way from the market, our dollar to euro or US dollar ratio is, makes us attractive.
How do you find the kind of the domestic market is? Because I know a lot of the time when we have conversations with people breeding or involved in the sport, a lot of the time outside of Europe, people are looking to Europe specifically on the breeding side, but how things are developing. When you're in Europe, then you're looking to the likes of the US or everybody's looking somewhere else. How do you feel that the market is at the moment, kind of domestically in Australia, particularly in comparison to maybe 10 plus years ago? Where do you think things are at? Is Australia a credible market for, say, your own breeding program or people that are trying to breed a similar type of professional show jumping horse?
I think that, I mean, the quality of horses in Australia has just skyrocketed. I was lucky enough to be at probably some of the start of that, but there's just been a huge, a really rapid uptake. There are a lot of, you know, amazing horses being bred here, and the quality of the horses is good. And at the top end, a good horse is always worth a lot of money. It doesn't matter where you are. There's always They're so hard to value, as I'm sure you know. The same person can think this horse is worth mega dollars, and but I won't pay so much for this one. And someone else could be have a totally different opinion. What's an average price for a horse? It has been very frustrating, I must say, to see people who maybe not quite so much now, but you know, 5, 10 years ago, would go overseas looking for a horse, would bring one back that really think, I've got a better one in the paddock than this. And but there's, you know, I think there's a lot of and I wouldn't, this isn't people that are, say, newer coming into the industry. It's a little bit of a it was, I don't think so much now. It was a little bit of a much more kudos to have gone to Europe to buy a special horse and bring it back. But I think that's starting to change now. But young horses are hard because people aren't producing them anymore. I think that I talk to people in Europe and in the US, there aren't very many people that produce the horses. Everyone wants to spend the dollars and have one ready made. But young horses are, they're a different ball game. And there aren't so many people now who have the patience or the time to take courses on. You must find the same.
Yeah, it's the same in Ireland. Obviously, we probably have
Very fortunate.
quite a positive industry in that aspect in terms of young horse producers, but it is still even the younger and younger riders want to be in the big classes. Friends and contacts in Europe have a big challenge. A number of times each year, I'm asked if I know of any good young hardy Irish riders that can come and produce the young horses. And
Yes.
even when they take on those riders, sometimes it's very short-lived. They take them on for a young horse position, but very quickly then they're looking at other people or their friends getting in to jump the bigger classes and they lose interest in producing the young horses. But I think there are great business opportunities there for especially younger people who are effective young horse producers. If they have a skill set that lends themselves to that, I think people could develop quite a positive business because they're going to become more and more and more in demand. And yeah, it's like you can never, it's really hard to make up that time. Like if those young horses aren't effectively produced and educated in a positive way, it's very hard. You're always going to be struggling against that. But the value of if someone can approach those earlier years in the right way, the value of those horses that then they can offer the market is often quite large.
That's right.
And even just I guess any sports person probably is drawn by the ego and the glory of the bigger stuff, but in terms of a business decision, I actually think there's a lot to be said for being
The
a
slower
specialist young horse producer.
down. Absolutely. I think that's right. And the people that can do that are becoming fewer on the ground.
Yeah.
And I found in Australia especially, because we don't mostly our riders are amateurs, very capable amateurs, but their business is in something else. It's not,
Yes.
it isn't really, the equine dollars are in racing, not so much in the performance
Yeah.
horses. And there are many good riders. A horse is a dream that they can, you know, go into a World Cup qualify or and get into shows because we don't have the numbers of people that prohibit entries. Shows are tight. Don't get me wrong. It's hard sometimes to get into shows because it has become so popular. But at that very top end, if you want to get into a World Cup show, you can still get in. And so your horses, it's a dream that you can achieve yourself and work it yourself. So there's not actually a professional group of people that just do the young horses that prepare them. People will start competing their horse at 6 and take it through to 8 and 10 and 12 or sell it on the way through. But but no one is actually producing those horses.
With a lot of breeders, again, going back to the bigger stuff and the glory and these ideas that we all have when we're starting out. But for a lot of breeders, when you ask breeders what their ultimate goal is, it's to breed a horse that's good enough to compete at the Olympic Games. And you ask riders what's their ultimate goal, and it's again to be good enough to get in the position where they can represent their country at Olympic Games.
Mm-hmm.
To then be in a situation where, as a breeder and a mother, you breed a horse that's good enough to go to the Olympics, and an athlete that, and that's not taking away from all the work that Hillary puts in, but to be in a situation where you get to an experience Olympic Games as both the mother of the athlete and the breeder of her Olympic horse for the Olympic Games in Paris. Can you talk me through that whole experience of what that was like for you?
Ah, it's an interesting, it's been such a long journey. When Hill first saw Milky Way when she, as a foal, mm-hmm. she said, I like this one. Just straight off the bat, I like this one. She broke her in, did all the early work with her. When Milky was about 5, when Hillary went overseas, and the mare stayed with Amanda Madigan, rode her for maybe 18 months, and then we sent her over, and Helen Chug said, I think she's a little bit small to send. But we sent her anyway. And she was wayward. She was, you know, she wasn't easy, but she could always jump and Hill, it's, you know, there were times when we could have sold her for a lot of money. But we decided, both for me as a breeder, she's been, you know, a wonderful flagship, I suppose, for us, but also it's been an amazing partnership that she and Hill have had, and it's a real testament to Hill's tenacity and skill that she's got. I mean, I'm just so proud of Hill and the job that she's done with Milky. I know how hard she's worked. She was probably on, as you would know, at that level, you're hovering around for a little while before you actually get the tap. You know, you wait a year, you wait another year. But it's an incredible experience to, you know, stand up on the kiss and cry and watch your horse going around, and it was a terrific family experience to have, because obviously we have family here. Hill's husband Fritz has family in the Netherlands, and so just for everyone to be there and to be part of the Australian team was incredible. It was just amazing.
Were you able to enjoy it at the time, or Do the nerves as a parent or a family member of the athlete, do the nerves take over? Or were you able to enjoy it in the moment, or is it that you can appreciate it on reflection?
It certainly, there's no doubt there's a lot of pressure in that situation. But I think, you know, there were so many things that you just had to marvel at. We were so fortunate. I mean, even just Paris was, you know, where could you have been at a better venue? It was just an amazing feeling, seeing your horse in with the very best of the horses that there are in the world. And it's just really hard. I'm sorry, I feel it's very, really difficult to describe.
Yeah.
But, you know, a terrific experience. Yeah, you know, with the team, with everyone together and fighting for the same goal, you always want, and it makes you hungry to do better another time. I mean, I think if you ever got the chance to do it again, I think you'd learn so much from that experience. And we, as Australians, we don't get a lot of opportunity to ride teams, because our riders are spread all over the world. So we've got a few in North America and a few in Europe, and I think at that stage we had in Canada, and then we have also good riders here. So the team being together, it's kind of a last minute thing because you haven't had that bonding experience before, which on the one hand is fantastic because you're all there as Australians competing together, but you're a little bit on tenterhooks because you don't know them as well either. So experiencing team competition is, I think, a really important thing for riders to experience, and I think that's starting to change. We're seeing our young ones are starting to do Trans-Tasmans, and that means New Zealand for them. So they'll come over and do teams or interstate teams, and I think the Youth Olympics, things like that. I think it's terrific to see those things starting to happen, because the more Australians can ride as a team. Nations Cups are a little bit far for us, and it's hard to get enough of them all together. But it was an incredible experience, absolutely. Just to we wish we'd heard our anthem more often, but it, no, it was a terrific experience.
You mentioned that with Milky, as you call her, that when Hillary first saw her as a foal, she decided that was something special, or that was one that she wanted. In especially at that point, and in those young horse years, did she articulate to you what it was about her that made her pick her and made her feel that way about her? Because it's to go out and go, right, that's the one, that one's different, that one's special. We have those moments, but then to get to go all the way and go to an Olympic Games with that same horse is quite something.
I think she always had, she was always very independent, very light on her feet, so much spring and so much forwardness, just always wanting, and very brave, unbelievably brave, never had a backward thought ever. And I think those were the first qualities. And then as she got to know her better, she had her little quirks, but I think maybe even some of it was getting around her, maybe the challenge of winning her over, of working with her. I think this I think sometimes the things that you work hardest for, you appreciate the most as well. That's she's never really articulated anything except what once she started to jump her, like really jump her, she said, "I've never felt that I would go into the ring and not come out." She goes forward. She's got so much power behind. So it's just, I think it's given her, it's made her particular about what she's striving for now as a breeder. She would be the best advisor I would have as a breeder now, because she can feel what I can only see, but she can feel it as well. And she's been in, Europe long enough that she's seen many of these best, the really top horses as young horses, which teaches you a lot in watching their development as they've come through. Even the opportunity to see some of the horses that are now, the top of the pops with stallions. She's seen them develop as young stallions, as young horses, and I think that's where Europe is very good as developing. The young horses on the way through. Milky's always had that lightness, and she's so easy on herself. She's, her legs are still as dry as an 8-year-old. She doesn't get tired. She's fresher on the as fresh on the third day or the fourth day as she is on the first. She just doesn't get tired, which is a nice thing to have in your quiver.
Yeah,
So.
and as well as getting to enjoy her international career, she has also been successful in the breeding world. And
Yeah.
how did you manage that? You've bred a number of foals from her over the years. How did you manage that? Did she carry any herself at any point in her life, or was it all embryo transfer?
The only one she ever carried was Come By Chance, that Dave Cameron has taken to, has done a couple of 5-stars and has done some Nations Cups with. And I think, as Hill always says, she wasn't cut out to be a mother anyway, because the minute she nearly galloped away and left it, and what is that She wasn't particularly maternal.
Okay.
And yes, we before she went to Europe, we flushed her, and she had twin embryos to Emerald, and so one of those one the filly has given us quite a lot of offspring now. And then there was another one that did get that Q Metallica. He was rebadged, also went overseas. And then the Espionage is the brother to that one. He was left as a stallion for a while, and we do have semen from him, and he's actually producing some really interesting horses. So that's something that I'm quite enjoying to see now, because we've got horses that have come two generations on both sides
Yeah.
we've bred, and that's terrific. It's so interesting. It's just fascinating to see how the mix is producing.
You are going to be in an interesting situation in a few years' time. In 2032, you obviously have a home Olympic Games in Brisbane. What's the goal? What's the focus from Hillary's perspective? But also, are there young oaks that either for Hillary or with other people that you're watching thinking that could be a real contender for Brisbane?
Sure, the foals that we've got on the last couple of years of foals, there are some really special ones, I think, in my opinion. I haven't been at the competition cutting edge like a lot of the big breeders have for a long time, but I think there are some very nice a couple of real possibilities there. I'm probably a little bit, I guess I also feel the right horse in the right hands as well. It's the partnership is so much that creates the horse. We're a little bit different, I think, to the racing industry, where they run and it's such a long, long time to develop them. And we've all seen the horse that just blossoms under a particular rider, or vice versa, the rider that sort of finds the right horse, and that's always a hard one. Like, I guess, I mean, I would be just as happy to see one of my horses at the games as, I mean, he'll count ride them all, and she'd be the first to say that. Much as I'm sure she'd love to be there, but I know also equally she'd be just as happy to have an Oaks horse represented. But
It's good for
there's
business either way as well. You know, like if one's there with someone else, it's a great flagship for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And hopefully you can have both.
That's right. Well, it's interesting, actually, already the thought of Brisbane now being ready for the 32 Olympics. There's already you can feel the fervor in Australia, which is really exciting. Everyone's getting excited. And there'll be a lot of people looking in their paddocks, I can tell you, for the right horse and that's a really good thing. It'll be a real, shot in the arm for the equestrian sport in Australia, I think.
You would imagine so, because really the majority of the horses at I think at the last Olympics the average age was 13. But even if we say that the majority of the horses are going to be 10, 11, 12, 13. If my maths are never my strong point, but then we're looking at 3 to 6 year olds now, is it?
That's about right. Yeah, that's right.
So you'd imagine for the people that are really serious, particularly for Australia's riders that are really, really serious about giving that a shot, they're gonna have to be like really, really keeping their eyes peeled, maximizing their resources and being on the
Absolutely,
best terms with their sponsors and supporters, because they
that's
have to give
right.
themselves the best chance. They have to be buying those horses now, unless they have sponsors with phenomenal resources, obviously. But really, they
That's
have to be making those investments now to give themselves the best chance to be able to build those partnerships,
right.
be in the mix, even in the mix.
That's right. Even in the mix, not yes. Oh well, you know what I mean with selections. I mean nothing selection and horses and riders. I mean, you know, it only takes an injury or you know, not being informed. It's as simple as that. You just have to. Yeah. But there's a lot of other sport than just Olympics and World Championships as well.
Of course, yeah. The question that I like to finish each interview with is the same one. And it's, what advice would you offer to a young breeder or to someone at the start of their breeding career?
That's a really hard one. I think be true to your own principles and breed your horses for the right reasons. I don't think breeding is something that you would go into to make money. I don't think you should look at it as being a commercial enterprise first and foremost. There are ways you can do that. You know, there are models that you can do that with. You can breed and just sell your foals. But for me, be true to what you want to breed and breed the best animal that you possibly can, something that's trainable, and bring it up as well as you can as well. Make sure that its nutrition is good, its feet are kept on top of, that it's ready to be handled, and it's interested in human beings so that it's ready to make a partnership with a person.
If you enjoyed this episode or any of the previous episodes, why not send it to a friend or share it on your social media?